from the same community?
No.
It's Catherine. Correct. I have the block on the scene.
All right. All right. Seems like we have a quorum today, so I'm going to try, so if everyone could just kind of take their seats so that we can begin the meeting.
That'd be great.
So,
yep. Bob and I have been reappointed.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
See how easy it is for the faculty, by the way?
Reappointments. Just in the GPS,
okay.
Yes,
great.
We need four people. So. We have two people.
Okay. So, yeah, if everyone could just kind of get their food and then...
Just so you can vote.
And then
yeah,
get started.
That's what I do.
And then, yeah, so get your food and then sit. Yeah, so just call the roll. That usually gets them.
Anderson.
Here.
Battaglia.
Present.
Bensel.
Here.
Cone.
Here.
Cotman. DeRouge.
Here.
Fitch. Guido. Pat.
Here.
Howard.
Here.
Kaufman.
Here.
Kim. Cruiser. Lowe. Michael?
Here.
Quinn?
Here.
Schott?
Here.
Van Loan?
Here.
Wiggers? Winarto?
All right, great. I didn't count how many people are present. There's definitely a quorum. So with that, we'll move into the call for late additions to the agenda. Does anyone have any late additions to the agenda, Matt?
Just a brief resolution thanking the members of Cornell's campus judicial system. I'm going to send out to listen right now. It's in the same vein as our thanking the members of the assembly.
Okay. We'll put that on the agenda if there aren't any objections. All right, seeing no objections, that'll be on the agenda. Matt, do you want to forward that out to everyone?
I would be glad to do so right now.
Great, okay. Any other late additions?
I mean, I guess a resolution text for the Appendix A and the JA reappointment procedures also going out via email. In essence, it's just adding, you've seen the language before, but it's just clarifying them and making sure you have the full picture.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll do that right now.
Just send that out. Okay. Any other late additions? This is your last chance to put something on the UA's agenda this year. Okay, sentimental. We'll move on. Next is the approval of the meeting minutes, the April 10th meeting minutes. If everyone wants to just take a minute to leaf through those, and then if someone feels satisfied, we can entertain a motion to approve.
To approve the April 10th meeting minutes.
Second. There's been a motion to approve the April 10th meeting minutes. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to approving the April 10th meeting minutes? Okay, seeing no dissent, the April 10th meeting minutes are approved unanimously. We'll now move on to the April 24th meeting minutes. You'll take a second to look through those. That was in our 701 Clark Hall. Chris?
For resolution 14, the title change to that was part of the amendment, so it's definitely part of the website.
Is this the April 24th meeting?
April 10th.
Oh.
We just passed April 10th.
Yeah, we just approved those.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
It's a typo. We'll pick up.
It's in the void. It's in the void now. Yeah, so April 24th. Anything on April 24th? Does anyone want to move?
Motion to
second.
All right. Is there any dissent to approving the April 24th meeting minutes? Seeing no dissent, the April 24th meeting minutes are approved. We'll now move on to the April May 1st meeting minutes. Let's take a minute through those. Okay.
Motion to approve the minutes from April or May 1.
Second.
It's been a motion to approve the May 1st meeting minutes. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to approving the meeting minutes? Seeing no dissent, the May 1st meeting minutes are approved. And with that, we will move on to the business of the day. Resolution 16, examining Cornell's policies for temporary disability parking. Yeah, just that resolution.
So, this resolution was discussed at our last meeting. It looks at two portions of Cornell's temporary disability parking policies. The first is how we address those with students with temporary disabilities. Currently, faculty and staff, if they have they break their foot, can't walk for whatever reason, can get free temporary disability parking for up to 8 weeks. Students must pay a prorated version of the full parking fee. We find this concerning because it essentially creates a socioeconomic barrier to people who are able to, if you can't walk, it's not your, generally not your fault. And in essence, if you have a lot of money, you're able to do it. If not, you aren't. It's also concerning because parking prices are set at Cornell to discourage people from bringing cars to campus. That being said, if you aren't able to walk or temporarily disabled, that's a different rationale for why you'd want to park on campus versus a student who's willing just who just wants to park their car on campus. Additionally, it also examines the fact that the faculty and staff, it's the temporary disability parking is subsidized by the university benefit pool. However, students paying the student health fee, which in essence is meant to be something analogous, and that with the minimal, or we believe is the minimal marginal cost of having additional, or in essence, temporary parking less than 8 weeks, that any expense could come out of that pot of money. There's a bunch of examples about how this could be, how problematic, in essence, things like CU Lift. While they are good for longer term, the amount of paperwork and the short duration of temporary disabilities makes it more difficult.
Okay. You're going to run for trustee?
Excuse me?
Yes, I am going to run for trustee.
Point of, I mean, okay.
Can we? just leave it on. I'm curious.
I really want to know what's happening.
Wow.
It's Gina. Gina's rocking.
I know.
But we don't see her. It's kind of like...
Yeah, just do you want me to just turn it off?
Yes. Yeah, motion to turn it off.
No. All right, we can leave that.
Okay,
we'll just listen to whatever's going on over there.
Okay.
So continue.
As I was saying, I hope it's not. I mean, this isn't a funny matter. I'm sorry if you feel that way, but. It's difficult to the way university addresses temporary disability parking for women who are pregnant. In essence, right now, for faculty, staff, and students, pregnant women in their third trimester are eligible to receive either a closer accommodation for parking or a temporarily disabled parking permit. In essence, because women in the third trimester may have a difficulty walking. I also want to thank Rena for really she worked a lot on this as well. She's not here, but in essence, for the university charges a fee for that. And we're concerned that this appears to be inequitable because every other temporary disability for faculty and staff, there is no fee. Additionally, it may contravene Cornell's legal obligations because discrimination against individuals who are pregnant is illegal. The EEOC has guidance, as in the resolution, that states, in essence, you may not treat someone who is temporarily disabled due to pregnancy differently than any other form of temporary disability. The fact that Cornell is charging a pregnant woman for the privilege of parking for temporary disability permit is concerning, and therefore we're also asking that be ameliorated. So the resolution has been was on the agenda for 2 meetings ago, discussed last meeting, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So does anyone have any questions for Matt?
Well, no questions, but thank you for a concise summary of what I agree is a real issue we should address.
Thank you, Matt.
Joe?
Oh, Catherine had something.
Oh, Catherine?
What was the justification for why students had to pay and everything? Like, was there something that was justified for it? Or was
yes.
It just like, this is probably just
so I should also say this resolution has been about a year and a half in the making. I was brought to my attention a while ago. We were able to have some people from Transportation Services and Student Disability Services attend, I want to say, our April 18th meeting. And they explained that, in essence, they see it as students have to pay to park on campus, and their rationale was students are actually getting more value by when they're for temporary disability parking, because instead of paying a couple hundred dollars for a perimeter permit, they're paying a couple hundred dollars to park anywhere on campus, and that was the justification. I personally, in the resolution, finds that problematic because, as I said earlier, someone who's choosing to park on campus is a different set of circumstances. It's a voluntary choice. If you break your foot, it's not a voluntary choice, and therefore it's concerning. So the rationale essence was, oh, you're deriving more value. But to me, value doesn't even come into this, because there are some places where you only need it for 2 or 3 weeks. It's cheaper to pay by the day in some parking lots than it would be to get a permit, which is not what we want to do. And we want students if they are injured, to be able to go to class as best as possible. I mean, it's a bad situation. And the people who are most likely affected by this are the ones who don't have a lot of money, and those are the ones who are most likely to be negatively affected by an accident or injury anyways.
Okay. Does anyone else? I don't have anyone else. Joe?
I think it's a very good resolution. It was very well written. So with that, motion to vote.
So I have a question. On line 131, it says, includes third trimester parking, accessible parking for pregnant faculty and staff. Does that also extend to pregnant graduate students?
Yes, the way that's worded, I don't have the exact resolution for you. The way it's meant to be, though, is because faculty and staff already get free temporary state parking, it's asking that, at the very least, pregnancy be immediately included in that for faculty and staff, and then also later on asks that temporary state parking be free for students as well. So that's just, because faculty and staff get it for free, we want temporary pregnancy disability related parking to be lumped in that immediately, and we want student temporary disability parking to be made free anyway.
Okay, did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone last minute questions on the resolution? No? Okay. There's been a motion to vote.
Second.
There's been a second. Is there any dissent in voting on this resolution? Seeing no dissent, we will vote on the resolution. If you are in favor of Resolution 16, please raise your hand or placard. I was going to say.
Which one?
Lethal.
Laughing with me, or
yeah.
Oh yes,
well, yes, absolutely. All right, if you're opposed to the resolution, if you'd like to abstain, okay. By a vote of 11-0-1, the resolution 16 passes. Congrats, Matt.
Thank you.
So now we'll move on to a UHRB appointment update.
Thank you. So that also be me.
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. So, one moment. I will begin for me momentarily. However, the UHRB, after our last meeting, fortunately we were able to, are we taking minutes or what are we?
Well, he's trying to set up the recording because the recording got shut down.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess continue.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in essence, we were able to receive the copy of the decoder key last Wednesday or Thursday, and we've begun the process of reaching out. However, because of the multi-week delay, a lot of the candidates are in finals, are traveling, or otherwise unable to get back to us in a timely fashion. And because of that overall delay, I regretfully don't have a UHRB slate to present to the Assembly today. That being said, we have a contingency plan. I've been in contact with Joe Sisney, who is the Administrative Chair of the Hearing Boards. For instance, what our plan of action is, for members who are on the boards and wish to continue, the UA Executive Committee will, after this, post their names publicly in some manner, perhaps through a listserv, and then give them emergency appointments until they can be formally reconfirmed in the fall. We're also going through our list and attempting to, this is the individuals who we want to follow up with them, and assuming that there are no concerns, post them publicly, also give them temporary appointments until the fall, and then in the fall, actually go through and confirm everything that must be done. It is not ideal. It will function. And part of the draft Appendix A for the bylaws is an effort to ensure this never happens again, and it is our sincere hope that that will be fixed.
Yeah. Thanks for your diligence, and I'm sorry that you encountered obstacles. Does anyone want to ask a question or give a comment? No? Okay, then we'll move on to Judicial Administrator Reappointment Procedures Draft Language.
Fantastic.
Also, Matt?
Yes, it seems to be a lot of me today.
It's pretty much all of you except for one of you.
Yes, well, I actually just sent an email out. In conversations with the CJC and with the University Administration, we were able to make a couple of tweaks to the language in the packet. And this was also a resolution shell to go along with, or a script resolution to go along with it. In essence, the big changes, and if you want to pull it up, I can go slowly, but the big changes are it moves from a one- or from a two-year term as renewable to an indefinite term. Second, as this is consistent with what we briefed the Assembly on previously, but it goes from a two-year term to indefinite term. The search committee, when we're finding a completely new JA, remains at its current size. However, the chair of that committee will be mutually agreed upon by the UA and the Office of the President. It also gives the president discretion. If the president, for some reason, doesn't like the candidates that are proposed by a search committee, again, for a new JA, you can go ask for more. And in the event of a vacancy, the president has discretion. It's right now, the code says he or she must appoint an associate judicial administrator. Now it says they must appoint an associate judicial administrator or other qualified individual with our concurrence. Presumably that could be a former JA or someone else. We also have the JA undergoing an annual review. The CJC struck the word performance out of that. It goes through and it works with the chair of the assembly, or designee, and the designee of the office of the president. Includes the involvement of a number of UA members, the JCC, chair of CJC designee, and other UA members. The review has a public and private component. The public component is asking journal members of the community to be able to deposit their feedback, whether that be good, bad, or otherwise. It'll be confidentially given to the feedback group. It also says that there'll be outreach to individuals who are involved in the process, the judicial process, including members of the hearing boards, other members of the JA's office, potentially complaints and respondents. There's some sensitivity around that, considering that they have people actually gone through the process in an adversarial fashion, as well as members of the JCC's office, etc. That feedback, as I said, will go privately to the chair of the UA or designee and the designee office of the president, who will then share it with relevant parties, including the JA, as they see fit. The performance feedback at the end. The feedback at the end will be given to the JA by those two individuals. The other change is removal procedures. Because we're moving from a set term, where the UA and the president can vote up and down every 2 years, it's changing so that currently the president, the JA, can only be removed one year in the term by the Board of Trustees upon action of the recommendation of the UA. That's being changed so now the UA could vote to remove the JA at any time by a majority vote of seat membership taken at a regularly scheduled meeting. The president agrees with that decision to terminate. The termination goes effective immediately. If the president doesn't and we can't come to an agreement, the UA can bump it up to the Board of Trustees, who would then figure it out. Their action would be final. The president also would have the ability to begin the process of removing the JA similar to us. The president would notify the chair that he or she wishes to remove the JA. The chair would then inform the assembly, and if the assembly votes yes, again by a majority vote of its seated membership at a regularly scheduled meeting, the JA will be removed. If the UA votes no by a vote at a regularly scheduled meeting, then the president, in essence, and no other arrangement will be found, the president would then go to the board, and the board would then have the final say as well. So those are the biggest changes. I believe I have them all. It's in the language I sent out as a tweaked version. I have been informed by the administration that President Pollack believes this current language is acceptable to her. And that's also why there's some changes from what was sent out in the packet, because we were going back and forth to make sure we're in the situation. That being said, the assembly remains free, as always, to amend, change, vote yes, vote no, or do anything else they wish with this language. And I am more than happy to answer any questions. Also, actually, I should also be sure, the resolution that goes along with it is very short. It's Resolution X. It more or less describes what's happened. We looked at it in the fall. We got kicked back to us. We looked at it in spring with Resolution 11. We held a number of discussions, and then you've been briefed, the CJC's been briefed, everyone approves it, and the language that's in the email I just sent out will be put through, and that's our recommendation.
Right. If you have comments or questions, please raise your hand. Richard.
So, that's an excellent summary. I want to underline some of the things in the process of deliberations, because we've been working on this for months, and it's been hours and hours of work in the committee on it. And the balance between these, there are a number of things that have to be balanced in the construction of the JA's office. One is the relative balance between influence from the central administration and from the university assembly in the selection of the JA. Another is the second one that I think is almost equally important, but in a different dimension, is the ability of Cornell to recruit quality JA judicial administrators. And that one is almost oblique to the other two. But one of the things that's most remarkable about this whole process, I think we should underline, is the negotiation. I guess Dave, you and Matt both negotiated.
The executive committee
and with the administration. And when they came back, many of the administration's recommendations and changes were in fact quite constructive. So we ended up in the committee finding that the language that came out of those things was often better than the language that we've been considering in our kind of ad hoc way in the committee. So I really endorse this. It is a little bit delicate, more delicate perhaps than Matt alluded to in his description, in the sense that, you know, this is a compromise. And it's been worked out, and it's been, as far as we can tell, it balances the interests of the UA, the central administration, and our interests collectively in recruiting quality JAs. So I strongly endorse it.
Thank you. And just to Richard's point, I mean, really, it's been a very constructive conversation with the administration. The resolution commends them for that. I think this is an excellent example of how, when the assemblies and the administration want to work together, we do so quite well. This was done in about a month, which for a code amendment of this magnitude is quite an accelerated timeline. In terms of public notice, we actually took out a couple of ads in the Corner of the Sun about the pending code changes. This has been posted on our agendas multiple times, been sent out for personal outreach. I personally briefed a number of our constituent assemblies about it. As is the idea, is being that we've been trying to ensure that there's a lot of discussion and dialogue, but it is compromised. The reason we could be rid of term is because a two-year term appointment.
What did you say?
The reason we're getting rid of the two-year term, as we just said, is because a two-year term appointment taking someone to Ithaca is not as hard to attract someone, in essence, because the Office of the District Administrator, by design, sits outside the general administration because to be independent. But because of that, the term makes it difficult to attract talent. This is trying to balance the need for oversight and accountability and independence with the fact that you need people who are competent and qualified in the JA's office, and that's why we have this. I really think not to speak on behalf of the exec committee, but I personally am very proud of how it went. I think it was a productive discussion, and I think I'm very happy with the language we came up with, and I think it is a good compromise.
Marty?
Just two small questions. On, let's see, item number three. Mm-hmm. It's the only item three.
It should be.
Pointed by, okay. A chair for the committee shall be jointly selected by the president and the university assembly from one of the appointed members.
Mm-hmm.
All the members are appointed, aren't they?
Yes, the reason that language is written that way is just to mean that the chair must come from one of the six.
From one of the six?
One of the six. So it's a six-person committee.
Okay.
Last time we had a JA search, President Garrett unilaterally appointed Ryan Lombardi to chair. It worked at the time, but something that we noticed afterwards was the code is silent, therefore, we have to mutually agree.
So, and the president can obviously find ways to make that selection. How does the university, I don't think we need to put it in here, but I'm just curious what your thoughts were about how the university concurs or participates in the selection, the university is sending.
Mm-hmm. So traditionally what will happen is, upon notification of the JA is leaving, the JA is gone, we'll convene a six-person search committee, four from us, two from the president.
Right.
It goes through, in this case, the president, for instance, when we did it last with President Garrett, I had a one-on-one meeting with President Garrett, because I was chair of the assembly at that time. Sat down, we walked through the process, how we're going to do it. We set a rough timeline since we had a discussion, appointed our members, and we were off to the races. This, in essence, would add to that discussion who's going to be the chair. Once we have our six-member slate, okay, the president wants someone else. Conceivably, I would want a faculty or staff member to be chairing this. I'm not sure I'd want a student just because of the logistics of running a national search. That being said, if you had an especially competent student and the president agreed, you could do it. The idea is you sit down, you have a discussion, you go through the search process, you get your candidates, and the president, as always, would say, I want non-ordained.
I'm sorry. I'm just asking about the chair of the committee.
Yes.
The university assembly has to act on that chair, and because you say be jointly selected mm-hmm. by the president and the university assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So you mean that this committee that's getting it all together mm-hmm. will then come to the university assembly and say, and this is the chair that we would like to propose.
Yes, and we have to approve it.
Okay, that's the kind mm-hmm. of thing you had in mind.
We could tweak it to the chair of the assembly if we wanted to streamline, but that's an option.
Or the executive committee of the assembly. Mm-hmm.
Well, the chair of the assembly is the convener of the committee. So if you want, I mean, just right now, the idea was to kick it wide. The assembly can always delegate and say,
I'm trying to speed up the process in some ways, and if we had to bring the whole thing about who's going to chair this committee, that suit selects the person. It's a small thing, but it's helpful to the whole assembly. It would have to wait a whole meeting. And I'm just suggesting that to speed up the process, it might be the executive committee by the president and the executive committee of the university.
So how about you throw in after university assembly, you just write executive committee?
Yes, that's what I would say. And then that I wanted to ask about item 4, overseen by the chair of the university assembly or designee. Who designates?
The chair would designate.
Okay. I guess that's natural enough, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Or, that's how I read it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Did you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion, I guess, to do what Marty suggested in terms of adding the executive committee after. Can you say where it was?
After university assembly.
Yes, I don't know the actual line number, but it's part of the highlighted. It's like the chair for the search committee shall be jointly selected by the president and the university assembly executive committee.
Okay, so there's been a motion to everyone on page 1 of 3 for the. There's been a motion to amend. The sentence that reads, a chair for the committee shall be jointly selected by the president and university assembly from one of the appointed members. The motion to amend would say, and university assembly executive committee, so that there is no delay.
Sure. So
it's expedient, yes.
Well, you don't need to put so in this.
No. I think it's
yeah, I was not. That was just my...
Thank you.
Yeah.
It would just be executive.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. University assembly, so... Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
There's a second. We'll now move into discussion on the motion to amend. We're in discussion on the motion to amend.
There's been
a motion to call the question. There's a second.
Second.
Is there any dissent to calling the question? Is there any dissent to the amendment? Seeing no dissent, the amendment passes unanimously. We can now move back into discussion. Did you
call a question? On the whole thing? Yes.
This is Resolution 21, then.
It's Resolution 21 for everyone.
So this is...
I move Resolution 21.
Yeah, so there's been a movement on Resolution 21, just so everyone's on the same page. Is there anyone who, like, needs to, like, take a second and read this over for a couple more minutes, or is everyone cool with this?
It is a
like,
big,
at least voting on this, if you're not. Yeah? Because this is very important, so... Okay.
Matt summarized it well.
That's good. I just want to make sure that everyone's on the same page because this is important. So this is Resolution 21. There's a shell resolution which just summarizes like what
the process.
Just the process doesn't substantively change anything. So if you're in favor of Resolution 21, judicial administrator reappointment procedures language, please raise your hand or placard. If you are opposed to Resolution 21, please raise your hand or placard. And if you'd like to abstain, all right, by a vote of 11-0-2, that code amendment passes. Congratulations. We will now move on to other code amendments. This is which resolution number?
This one doesn't have a number. This one has a story, too. So, being brief, we have 10 code amendments before you. They've been on our agenda for over a month. We've been, President Pollack, many of them are from UA Resolution 4. President Pollack has asked us to undertake additional public comment and feedback. That's why they've been sitting on our agenda for so long. We have shell resolutions to go with them, similar to do with the JRE appointment. In essence, just summarizing what the language is. The language you have, those are the operative changes to the code. There is one small change to the indefinite suspension policy. In essence, it says that roughly right now, indefinite suspensions were, it's a footnote, indefinite suspensions were previously used in the code, they're no longer used. The president has asked we add as of substance of the date, in essence, once the code amendments go into effect. Frankly, we did it. It's an oversight on my part to not include it. It's the copy that I should have an updated copy, but that's the only change to them. But there are 10 amendments. The CDC has split them into 4 or 5 different tranches they want to pass, again, just grouping them. They are, the text is the same. However, in an effort to be as, allow as much public engagement as possible, we have gone and taken a number of steps, including placing ads in the corner of the Daily Sun, holding public office hours, which we actually had some people come to. We presented to some of our constituent assemblies on the 10 changes in the JRE appointment. I have taken steps to reach out to individual groups, post them publicly, and take other steps. However, because the ads are still running, which is an ad that did listen to the end, page 5, I believe, and what our intent was for today is, assuming there's no dissent, to preliminarily approve them, circulate, in essence, give it a couple more days if anyone wants to write in, because again, if you saw this on today, you might not have actually written in yet. And then, as of Friday, say, okay, we're in essence, we'll take a look at the shells, and then the actual text, and say we formally approve it via mail. Again, they've been on our agenda for a while, but in this case, considering that they've been around for so long, I personally would ask that if for a few more days to really tell the president we are doing everything in our power to ensure that there's the maximum amount of public community input. So that's what the, I mean, there's 10 changes. I'm happy to walk through them all individually again. They've been around for a while. If anyone has any questions, I'm more than happy to go through them.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Matt?
Richard. So we're not going to vote today?
In essence, what I was suggesting we do is we, in essence, preliminary approve them, set them on, in essence, we'll, again, to me, if someone comes to me with a comment tonight, I don't want to be able to say, oops, we already approved them, because again, the Daily Sun ads are running up through today. So in essence, to preliminary approve it, I'll circulate it to the members, and then, say, Friday, we'll then formally via mail say it's all approved and all set to go.
So we'll vote by email formally, but today, preliminarily.
Yes, this is just, unless there's something that, if this is an issue we want to look at. Because the CDC has one more meeting, so we could go and change things if we need to.
So, just to kind of clarify what the procedure for this would be, essentially, we have approved these code amendments, or code amendments that are 98% the same as what is written here. We approved them last semester. The president rejected them and gave a series of reasons as to why she couldn't accept them at that time. The committee spent the entirety of the semester reviewing those reasons and amending the language as the committee saw fit, just in order to ensure like 110% transparency and clarity and outreach, we can even extend the amount of time past you know this meeting, and then we can just vote by mail if you feel more comfortable, if you don't feel comfortable making a decision right now. So Bob.
Can you briefly summarize what it was that the president objected to and whether or not you think you've now addressed those?
Absolutely. So, in essence, the president, in her response, there are a number of code amendments. He actually had a couple of specific comments to the code amendments. We, for the most part, CDC accepted them. Again, they're generally very constructive. Mm-hmm. There were a few the CDC felt chose not to accept because they were either, they, in essence, were too far, they didn't necessarily, in our estimation, summarize where we wanted to go with it, or they removed too much text, or they may not have fully understood where we were going. But in essence, we incorporated a lot of changes, but generally, President Pollack said, even for things she had no issues with, she was concerned there was not enough public engagement and public outreach. Therefore, the committee, since then, we have undertaken a bit of a PR campaign. We held public office hours. I held 3 of them. Again, we had some people come to them, which actually was good. We talked to them. I reached out to constituent assemblies about the office hours. I briefed a few constituent assemblies on the changes, change by change. Some people may have fallen asleep while I was doing it, but I did it. We went through and placed a couple of ads in the corner of the Daily Sun. We have posted them publicly. We had a private comment box for anonymous comments. I checked recently, there were no comments filed. I have asked the office assemblies to place this for public comment. My understanding is they have done so. I have not necessarily, they were instructed to do so. They've gone out with our standard agendas and standard outreach. There have been reporters at our events. In essence, we've gone through and pulled out a lot of stops. After President Pollack sent us the asking for public comment, I met with the senior administrators, and they more or less said they didn't want to. They were not going to prescribe what we must do, but they simply wanted the opportunity for people to comment, even if no one did. Which is why we've gone wide. I mean, the Daily Sun, I think, is about as wide as we can think of. Just anyone looking will see it. It says, email us, come to the meetings. We have a people comment online. The idea really is to cast it as wide as possible. Also, why we're hoping to even give it a couple more days and just say, so we can tell President Pollack, we did everything in our power for a whole semester to get as much public feedback as possible. To be fair, I haven't received any substantive comments, only questions, but to at least really tell them that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, is everyone kind of clear as to what the step forward will be? Yeah. Okay. Then, essentially, this would be a motion to vote by mail. Yeah. Someone should do that.
Motion to vote by mail.
Second.
All right. There's been a motion to vote by mail and a second. So we'll just, we can just arrange a time to vote by mail before our terms expire. It'll be like within the next couple days. So that in case we get any last minute comments on these.
It also allows the full assembly, all 20 members to vote.
Right, and also to make sure that we get all assembly members voting. So, okay. So is there any dissent to voting by mail? No? Okay, then we'll vote by mail. So the vote by mail passed unanimously.
Just to clarify, so all the current members, in other words, that won't be on the...
That's right, current, this term, 2017, 2018 members.
Yes. So our term goes through May 31.
Okay, so this is... Oh, no, I get to go.
No, it's an exam. Dang it. Oh, it's some
appetizer show game, sorry. So now Appendix A.
Yep.
There you go again.
So Appendix A, this was circulated via email. In essence, the appendix has some small changes. There's another shell resolution, which I think would be Resolution 22.
You're correct.
In essence, it's just articulating the process we've gone through. As members of the Assembly have unfortunately seen this year, the UHRE process was not quite as smooth as it traditionally has been. There are issues with getting information, there are issues with the timetable, and its general procedures. Additionally, over the past year or so, myself and Gabe Coffin, the chair, have had conversations with Michelle Horrath, the judicial administrator, about what her needs for the hearing boards are in terms of vacancies, filling them, and how to go through and standardize it. And also, additionally, the CJC has a number of informal procedures we've been following for a number of years that aren't formally codified. President Pollack has asked us generally to codify things, and noting that a lot of people, the assemblies have high turnover, to ensure that they are written down and recorded, we have drafted five pages of appendix that outlines the procedure we follow to appoint members of the UHRE hearing review boards. The version sent via email has a couple of small amendments, not too many. But in essence, it goes through and it says, it gives timelines that it must start in February, it gives the assembly more time. It clarifies that the assembly has the ability to anonymize or not anonymize. It says that information must be provided upon request. It gives, the goal is to give the assembly, the CDC, and the chairs of the flexibility to get the job done. It provides concrete information. It also says, in the issue of interpretation, it is our responsibility to interpret it, not an outside office's responsibility. And it attempts to go through and really itemize how we do it, why we do it, where we do it. We've tried to cover every eventuality. It is entirely possible, in fact, likely we may have missed one or two. But the general intent is, instead of having debates every single year of how we're going to do it, or fighting or who said what multiple years ago, which generally can be inaccurate, to formally write it down, put it in our bylaws so it stays there. So that's the resolution we have.
Marty?
Does this in any way pertain to some issues that have been brought up during the course of the semester about access to names of any sort or affiliation?
It does. As I informed the Assembly, we've had issues with access to names for the past couple of years. And every year, we get the names. This year, we got them, too. But every year, the delay becomes longer. And this year, the delay has forced us, in essence, we don't have a slate because the delay was so long. So this language, as it says, we get them. It clarifies the names are given immediately. As soon as, in essence, we get the anonymized applications, the chair of the committee and chair of the Assembly get the key as well. Presumably, you should shut the key off to the side. You don't look at it until you need to. But we have it, so when we're ready, we can use it.
Affiliations...
Yes. Right. It also mandates updates during the solicitation process. It says the solicitation process must be at least 2 weeks. It also schedules everything for February. So even if there's a delay, we're not running into May. We're running into March or April, which in essence gives the committee and the bank for all volunteers time to reach out, time to in essence take a breath. And just, I mean, for context, when we got the key last week, I had personally 30 pages of final papers to write. Other stuff. It has to give time so that we're not crunching down the semester because that's when everything happens.
Yeah. So does anyone have questions or comments on these? Oh, Elena, sorry.
I don't have. It's not related to this. This is logistically for people that were not on the email. Matt brought these today, and so the resolution language itself went out to people. The current term, and so I went ahead and put all those resolutions up on the box, and so when I send an email out to the new members, I did include a link to the box for this week, and so if you just go in there, you should be able to have access to all these documents.
Yeah. Okay, any other comments or questions? Because I think we have to vote on these today.
I move we.
So I know that I think that the Office of the Assemblies is on. I just wanted to make sure that, like, if the office wanted, like, an opportunity to comment, that, that I afforded that to the office.
Oh.
So.
I'm not sure.
So.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's fine. I mean, everyone's invited to attend the meetings. So, with that, yep, is there a motion to move to vote?
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to voting? All right, this is a bylaws amendment, so it requires a majority of the total membership to pass. So that's 11 votes. So if you are in favor of this bylaws amendment, please raise your hand or placard. And I am actually going to vote in favor, so that's 13 to if. Is anyone opposed? No? Any abstentions? No. So by a vote of 13-0-0, this is now Appendix A of the University Assembly bylaws. This should clarify things moving forward. I'm really happy we did this. Congrats, Matt. So, okay, now I get to sponsor my research.
I just want to congratulate Matt on having superintended these things through and faced the problems of them and come up with solutions. Thank you.
Good job.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go sit up there because it's unfair for me to sit there.
Just stay here.
I'll just sit here. Okay, but I'm not sure. So,
anyway, now we're on to Gabe's resolution number 20, which I forgot the name of. I think it's recognition of outstanding support to academic year 2018 University Assembly. Gabe, you have the floor.
So, I'm sponsoring this resolution. This is something that we do normally. It's basically just thanking all the members of the standing committees. It thanks all the members of the University Assembly, although it doesn't name all 20 of them, and thanks the members of the offices that we work really closely with, the Office of the JA, Office of the JCC, Office of the Ombudsman, and then the Office of the Assemblies. So thanks to that group of people. I went through the Office of the Assemblies online thing, the website, and I tried my best to get everyone's names. So if anyone sees anyone that's missing or that should be on there or shouldn't be on there, now would be a great time to let me know.
Okay. Matt?
Just note that the JCC's office, Doug Wagner, is another assistant JCC. There's a motion to add him onto the list on whatever line that may be.
Second.
Okay. So there's a motion to add Doug Wagner, and that has been seconded. Another member of the office of the...
Chief of Counselor.
Thank you. Okay. Are we voting on that motion? Anyone have anything they want to say about this motion?
Motion to call question.
Second.
Okay. So now, is there any dissent to voting on approving this motion? Oh, Ashton?
There's a typo.
Well, we're in that.
Oh, indeed.
We're on a motion, yeah. So, is there any dissent to change to adding Doug Wagner? Seeing none, we'll just approve it by unanimous consent then.
Okay.
Okay.
I can't make the motion, but there's a typo at the end of line 6.
We can just fix typos. So we don't need to do a motion. But
okay. So we're gonna fix the typo at the end of line 6.
I was writing a paper.
Okay. Any other comments, questions, motions on this resolution? Joe.
Motion to call a question.
Second.
Okay. So there has been a motion to call this resolution a question and a second. Is there any dissent to voting on resolution number 20? Okay. Can all members in favor please raise your placards? Okay, any that oppose and any abstaining? Okay, with a vote of 13-0-0, resolution 20 passes. Okay. Let's get
in the game. That was fun.
well, it was fun.
Yeah. All right. So now we'll do committee reports.
Nope. Late edition.
So late edition. Late edition is after.
Okay.
So yeah. Elena.
Oh no. Thanks everyone.
Yeah. Matt.
Okay. So we had a busy. We have CDC has one more meeting. Surprisingly, we're very busy this semester. My total tally is we're about around 30 meetings for the year, which is going back at least the same number of meetings we had in the past 5 or 6 years combined. We've had a very busy year, very productive year. You've seen a lot of what we have in front of you. We also undertaken to help the Title IX office rewrite their questions for prospective Policy 6.4 hearing board members. As the chair of the CJC, I was on that group with Dean Van Loan, someone from Ryan Lombardi's office, and then someone from HR as well. And the questions, respectfully, were the CDC, they can be answered with yes or no answers. So the CDC has endeavored to, frankly, rewrite them for them. After talking with Sarah Apple, the outgoing Title IX coordinator, she said she would appreciate the help. We've done that. Those are done. They're going through. We have also asked a bunch of information about the way the academic integrity works after Kendall Carr's discussion. There's some questions about how does that work. Some schools, for instance, the Johnson Graduate School of Management, appear to have codes that overlap with both the campus code and academic integrity, but don't necessarily align with them fully, so we're looking at that. Additionally, our working group on hate speech and harassment has finished, or roughly finished its work. It will be presenting a preliminary set of recommendations at the CDC meeting tomorrow. For those of you who've seen the Presidential Task Force recommendations, they are about 95% similar, which I think is excellent. It shows that two separate groups came to roughly the same conclusion. They'll be typing a formal report, which they'll be providing to the CJC, which I'll forward out to this year's assembly, as the new assembly, sometime during May, because they are also very busy as we are. I want to publicly thank them for that, though. It's been truly a pleasure to work with them. They've held 7 fora, a number of community outreach, multiple meetings, frankly, to the point where it's weekly, a lot of time and effort, and the people on it have truly done an excellent job, and I want to thank them for that.
Comments or questions for Matt? Joe.
I think everyone appreciates all the work that Matt as chair did, the CJC as a committee, and the hate speech working group and harassment got jumbled. But I think everyone here appreciates that. There was a lot of stress put on them, but I think they've definitely delivered a lot of forward progress that people are very appreciative of. Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Chris?
I want to tell the second person who said, I want to recognize the members of the committee, but especially that because it just puts an insane amount of work. Just going through the rules and all the regulations that exist on any given issue, just to benefit this campus. And I think it's often not glamorous, and it's just that's it.
Thank you.
A huge props.
All right. Other comments or questions? No. Okay. Then we'll move on to the Campus Welfare Committee. Joe.
Yeah. So our last meeting. What was our last meeting? Last Tuesday was our last meeting. It was a nice wrap-up to the whole entire semester. The committee reflected upon a lot of progress that it made this past year and a lot of progress that's going to be made forward, looking at a tobacco, not referendum anymore, survey, so that the university assembly kind of contains more control over that, because there was the major concern of the binding quality of that Martha Pollock originally didn't like, and so the surveys. So by using the survey, it provides data for the Scorton Center health initiatives, which they find extremely beneficial for future campaigns around tobacco usage on campus. And as well here at the University Assembly, it's going to be able for us as a body to actually interpret the data in a way that would be equitable to all the constituency groups on campus, so it's not, you know, overwhelming majorities of undergraduates versus minority of employees or whatever have you. And so that's going to be something that's going to be worked throughout, you know, the summer to make sure the logistics stay with it, which was something that didn't happen the last time. And so we're anticipating the fall to actually have the survey, and then the Campus Welfare Committee from there will most likely submit a resolution for the fall that actually provides the formal interpretation and the formal recommendation that the University Assembly wishes to endorse.
Comments or questions for Joe? No? Okay, well, I'd like to thank Joe for all of Joe's hard work this year. It's hard to chair committee as a sophomore, so thank you for kind of jumping in there and doing that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I remember the committee also recognized Joe's work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every meeting is perfectly organized.
Yeah, very good, very good. Yeah, so other comments or questions for Joe? No, okay, we'll move on to Chris, who's also good.
I think given that we were effectively defunded last semester, this is a huge improvement. Almost as weekly, I was able to meet last week because we are in meetings, so like alternating to UA meetings. I think we worked on a very broad range of issues, and we also passed some very useful resolutions, such as establishing a crosswalk behind Grizzly. There's a pretty high risk of accidents on that curve there. We also looked into expanding the Grizzly Feminine Highly products across campus, which is something that we didn't end up bringing to resolution, but the research has been done in that area. We passed the resolution to increase financial transparency in Cornell's investments. We also looked into expanding access to gender neutral bathrooms across campus. I think a lot of members brought a very valuable perspective and did really great work on the committee, and I'm excited to see where it goes next year. I'll be graduating, so I won't be around anymore. I think there's a lot of potential here, and I think we're still kind of finding our footing this semester because I hadn't done a committee before, I hadn't really operated before, but I think we're in a really good place now, and I look forward to what it does next year.
I just want to also thank Chris for actually, because he just kind of stepped into this role. Actually, he didn't step into it. We literally forced him into it. So thank you for not forcing yourself out and doing a really excellent job. Other comments or questions for Chris? No. Okay, then we will move into student assembly reports. Since Jung isn't here, Chris would be the highest ranking of you, okay. SA appointee.
We did two big things. One, we passed the Appendix E regulations, which are basically govern how the organization that the student assembly funds can use the funds that we give them. So that was Dave's big thing, this is the chair of the agency. And after much debate regarding how senior days uses our events, use our funds to sponsor the events. And we finally passed the entire thing too. And I think that you guys can look through the details of it if you're interested. And then secondly, at a non-quorum meeting, we debated the election rules for 3-4 hours. And we reformed those, especially with an eye to the appeals process, given the fiasco that occurred a few weeks back. I think we came to a good point. I mean, Travis, the chair of the elections committee for this semester was there, and then also some members that were involved in the whole process. I think our rules are very solid right now, and so what happened is past semester kind of happened, and the rules are very strong.
Comments or questions for Chris? Does anyone else from FJO, do you have anything you want to add? Just
we had a lot of Papa John's at the one meeting, but that's about it.
Okay, that's true. Next GPSA, Rena is not here, so I guess yeah.
I'm going to yield to Manisha, the outgoing executive vice president of GPSA.
Yesterday was our last meeting of the year. We talked briefly about the doctoral experience survey, which is pretty much a major survey on campus about the experience of student life experiences of PhD students. I'm really happy to talk to any of you if you're interested about something that were in that report that we thought were particularly interesting. Outside of that, the most interesting thing that happened yesterday was our election. I'm excited to announce, if you haven't heard, that Rena was re-elected for a second term as president of the GPSA. Our next executive vice president will be Anthony Barrientos Gomez, who is a graduate student in romance studies. Alex Leiden has been re-elected for a second term as our vice president for operations, and Alexa Cohn is incoming as our new vice president for communications. So if anyone has any other questions about committee chair elections, I'd also be more than happy to let them know who is going to vote.
All right, comments or questions for...
I just wonder, did the survey show anything surprising? I mean, can you summarize briefly?
So there were, I wouldn't say necessarily surprising, but the best thing that we have is that they added a new question about how many hours, on average, do students think they spend per week teaching? So the Cornell University policy says that on average we shouldn't be spending more than 15 hours per week teaching. The report shows that pretty much at 30% in the life sciences, the physical sciences, and the social sciences show that they're working more than that. They're working upwards of 16 hours per week. And in the humanities, it's an even more extreme problem, with over 50% of doctoral students in that program working more than 16 hours a week. So that's something that I think was the biggest concern to us, is that most of our PhD students, or not most of them, but a significant portion of our doctoral students are working more hours per week as a TA, or potentially working more hours per week as a TA than they are supposed to be under current university policy.
So what's the next steps?
So the graduate school meets with the DGSs to talk about that as well. Something that I think hopefully is going to happen in the fall is that we're looking to partner with our student advocacy committee chair to have some smaller breakout sessions with graduate students to talk about, one, keeping track of your hours to make sure that that number is actually accurate. Possible that students feel like it's higher when it's really not, but when you start writing it down, you realize, oh, actually, I'm not working 20 hours. But the next thing we want to do is really equip students to have that conversation with their faculty member and their director of graduate studies to say, actually, this is violating Cornell University policy, and to sort of work with them to mitigate that.
All right. Other comments or questions for Manisha? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to employee assembly. Oh, it doesn't. So Craig's not here. Any other EA? Yes, you too. And neither of you are on the EA.
I know that they had the new members come, and they elected, I believe they elected the new board. That's all I know.
That's good, yeah.
Oh, they elected an IOR employee representative for the first time.
Yes.
That's good. Okay, cool. So Faculty Senate, Charlie?
Yeah, last meeting is tomorrow, and we're basically devoted to that part of the social science review organizational group that's not concerned with the merger. So we'll have someone, we have four social scientists coming to speak on different options. I'm sure answer questions about the consensual relationship policy issue.
Okay, comments or questions for Charlie? No.
What is the motivation, that's not the right word, I guess, how is it that it was structured to have people talking about the non-merger side? What was the impetus? That's what
Well, we had a month in the April meeting.
Yes.
Kotlikoff, Ted, and me came as part of their listening tour, and almost, I'd say, 90% of the dialogue, wasn't really a dialogue, but 90% of that was all about the merger.
Right.
And the issue here is to get educated about the other parts, the other options that were part of the committee's report. So
right, so I guess I'm following up, thinking about what the action we took about the merger.
Taking it off the table, you mean?
Yes, yeah. And whether or not there is any briefing or that might have taken place to raise the status, one could say, if a whole meeting was given to the merger.
It was just directed by people on the floor. It wasn't,
right.
Ask any question.
In a positive or negative way, I suppose, right? Or, yeah. Whether or not this will be an opportunity to really do a thorough exploration of the other options.
Well, this is step one. So
okay.
We have
I got you. That's awesome. Great. Thanks.
Okay. Other questions or comments for Charlie? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to the liaison reports. Rena's not here, so. Kevin's not here, so we'll move on to the Council on Sexual Violence Prevention. Catherine, anything to report? No. Student Health Benefits Advisory Council, Joe?
They had their last meeting May 2nd. They reviewed a couple different, financial reports. They looked at, around the Ivy League, what other student health fees are like. They looked at, differences in administrative goals that they're having. That meeting was rescheduled from a previous meeting in which they saw extremely low turnout, which has been an ongoing problem in communications with this committee, with this council. So whoever is in it from the UA next year, I highly suggest start you know, just write something so that they actually incorporate better meeting times and actually ask the committee members, like, when they are free to meet, because most of the time they just go, here it is, a day before the meeting, and they expect people to show up, which I think is kind of rude. But, you know, it's all at the discretion of most Cornell Health, so I think whoever's the UA liaison from it next year should kind of take the forward initiative, which I didn't do, but take the forward initiative to be like, stop this bad practice.
Okay. Comments or questions for Joe? Seeing none. Campus Planning Committee, anything, Marty?
Yes, I just wanted to bring to the future UA members the issues that there are significant developments of the campus that are taking place, facilities developments and infrastructure developments, focus for infrastructure, it's changing it's improvements on various roads to create better lighting and passage for bicycles and multiple and pedestrian safety and things of that sort. And they're being planned developed and fielded through the Campus Planning Committee. So it's a very useful venue, I guess you could say, for issues to be raised that come to the attention of different members of the campus community and percolate through the different legislative bodies and then come to the UA. So in the future, if people wish to have those issues raised, it may be, I'd suggest to the delegates that you bring them forth and they can be in the course of the meetings. We've had discussions, and I've briefed you on a couple of them about things like arts on campus and where it'll take place. We have discussions about things like how East Avenue will be reconstructed. And then we have the big discussions of, for example, how East Village, which is a major development, will be structured and the different services, the overall kind of zeitgeist, the overall experience there, which is mixed use of commercial and service and housing for multiple income levels. We've had discussions of North Campus and how 2,000 or some beds will be added and what kind of services will be available on North Campus, what will be the blueprint, the layout of them on the ground, and how transportation might be organized to serve the needs of the students there. And then, of course, there's some things that you can see happening, like Maplewood, which is taking shape. In the next 2 or 3 years, North Campus will take shape. In the next 5 years, East Village will take shape. These are major, major additions to the campus, so they will change the whole feeling on the campus, albeit to the east and to the north, but still. And those of you who are going to be around for a little bit longer, or even people who are here and who are interested in how the campus grows, you know, can pay some attention and pay some mind to how planning factors in that in those developments. And I want to focus on one, which is a sort of particular interest to me, but to many, many other people. In the course of this year, there's been discussion about updating what's called the Campus Master Plan. Now, some of you folks don't necessarily know much about the Campus Master Plan because it's a sort of mysterious document that sits there, but it actually has a lot of effect on how things take shape, in the sense that certain aspects of development of the campus have to adhere to the campus master plan. It's actually land use, for example, structures of buildings, the use of buildings, and accessibility, things of that sort, are in the plan. The campus master plan is being redeveloped now, and because it's a number of years old. And one of the reasons why it's over a period of time since its original formulation, issues like sustainability, energy use, have become much more important to the planning. I understand. But I mean, this is the future.
It says 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give you two more, please.
Probably not. Maybe like 30 more seconds.
All right. Well, I would suggest that those of you who have an interest in the setting in which you're having your education, in which you're teaching, and in which you're working, might acquaint yourself with these developments and think a little bit about them. As far as sustainability is concerned, if you have an interest in energy use and sustainability, there are lots of things that are discussed in the campus planning committee that would be of interest to you. Consistencies and inconsistencies.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Does anyone have comments or questions for Marty? Thank you for the very thorough account of the meeting. We'll move into late additions to the agenda. I think, Matt, you had a late addition? Yeah.
Yep. It was sent me an email. I said it's an updated version of the type or permission. It's on the box now, too. Fantastic. Thank you, Elena. It's resolution, well, it used to be 23 at this point.
Okay, go on.
It's resolution thanking all the people involved in Cornell's judicial system. So this is the JA, JTC, hearing board chairs, hearing board members, and for good measure, the members of our working group on hate speech and harassment who weren't listed elsewhere. These people are people, especially since this is on behalf of the CJC, these are people who make the Cornell's judicial system tick. It's a really thankless job. Even talking to them, most of the day, they really get no public recognition whatsoever, but they are putting in time of their own accord to hear cases, to handle the matter, to handle the logistics of doing it. Most of them are volunteers. I mean, the JA's office is as compensated as the JTC, but the hearing board chairs are not, the hearing board members are not, and they're really what keep this process running. And it's a resolution just to thank them. A lot of the staff, and there's a lot of staff who are in the boards, it's actually they have sometimes a hard time getting time to go and do this. I think this is an issue we've seen with the EA as well, and we've been told that formal recognition goes a long way for those individuals, especially also tenure-track faculty who are not yet tenured. In essence, this is the type of thing that it's the least we can do for their service, and that's why I've added it to the agenda. It's a resolution model after our standard resolution of thanks.
It's quite thorough. Does anyone have comments or questions about this resolution? This is like, we can pass this because it's not. It's literally just thanking people. Yeah. So,
second.
It's been a motion to call the question. There's a second. Is there anyone who wants to like not thank any of the people, or to add someone that you really want to thank that didn't make it on? No. Okay. Then we can vote. If you're in favor of resolution 23, please raise your hand or placard. Charlie, is that a hand?
Oh.
Yeah.
All the
all right. If you are opposed, if you'd like to abstain, okay, by a vote of 12-0-1, resolution 23 thanking the judicial
system.
The judicial system. That passed. Congrats.
Thank you.
Matt.
And on behalf of the CDC, I thank this assembly for support and work. We had a busy year.
So okay. So, now comes the fun part. So, basically, we're going to enter an exec-a.
Yeah. I think we should clap for you, for all the chairs, for a good year, before we elect other people.
I have one more magic trick, though. which is I have to get pass it on.
Yeah, but I know, but we should call for all the people first.
Oh.
And actually, on Richard's point, I was going to ask the minute to reflect the Assembly's appreciation for your service as chair this year.
You don't have to do
well. I was going to. I think Richard already gave you part of the thing. We have a card for you as well.
We opened it prematurely,
but you may have given the.
Oh,
wow. The first. But we worked it. We all signed the money for you. So
thanks.
I really appreciate that. I'd cry if I had a soul. Yeah, all right. So now we're going to enter. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Soulless. Now we're going to enter an executive session and turn off all the bells and whistles. So bang the gavel.